You're now listening to the Legends Lingo Podcast. Here are your hosts, Al Powder and Maddie D.
Welcome back in, everybody. Legends Lingo Podcast, episode 263, is always presented by Student Union Sports. Make sure to check out everything at studentunionsports.com. Check out all of the daily blogs and all the podcasts, everything else in between. March Madness, literally right around the corner. We're in March now, first episode of March. And if you want your pockets to be a little bit bigger, make sure to listen to all the podcasts as they give out their March Madness picks. And maybe enter a bracket or two and see if you can win some money. Al DeHegan here. The whole crew's here tonight. Tom Powder, Cadmus. Powder, hello. Welcome, sir.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Your beard looks good. Your hair looks good. You got a good hair day going on, my friend.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Maddie Burnett is also here. You tried.
I tried. Listen, Pilgrim season's right around the corner, so, like, you know, I gotta let it flow out again, unfortunately.
That you do. And also, March is Women in History Month, so obviously we want to be thankful for all the women that make great contributions to the world, whether it is in the field of sports, the field of mathematics, the field, whatever field it may be, we thank you for that. So joining us tonight is actually a female writer that writes for SB Nation and covers the Celtics. She also writes about the Connecticut Sun for Next Hoops and Swish Appeal. It is Noah Dalziel. Please tell me I said it right. Dalziel. That's what it is. Noah
Dalziel. Dalziel.
Oh, I had it right the first time.
You had it right. Okay. Yeah, you did.
All right. Noah Dalziel joining the program again, writes for the Celtics for SB Nation. Noah, first of all, welcome. Thank you for joining the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Of course. So we want to give you an opportunity, like we give all of our guests an opportunity, just the opportunity to introduce yourself, say who you are, where you went to school, how you got into sports journalism, and all that good stuff. Feel free to say as much as you want or as little as you want. Floor is yours.
Yeah, so I'm from around here, grew up in Brookline, and went to college at Northeastern, did my undergrad and grad there, and I, you know, played basketball my whole life, basically was raised playing basketball and following basketball. My dad played professional overseas for like 20 years, so I was pretty much in my family's bloodline is to continue playing the sport. And then I think from a young age, also really enjoyed watching basketball, particularly watching the Celtics, and had a Celtics website that I maintained all of middle school where I posted my really bad takes and analysis on the games. And then, you know, have been mostly doing other things since graduating college. I work as a climate lobbyist, do a lot of policy work. But yeah, in the last year, kind of got back into sports journalism, that was my minor in college as well. And I'm actually covering the team, you know, part-time while I continue that work. So it's been a lot of fun, very exciting year to cover a basketball team, that's for sure.
So I will agree, the Celtics have been a lot of fun to cover this year, especially with just the record and how they're just basically kicking the crap out of everybody. And we're going to talk about that in a second. We actually saw your posts on, I believe it was Dan Greenberg, a Barstool, would sometimes like quote tweet and everything. So then we took a look at your tweets, and the thing that at least I noticed is that you also cover like the halftime shows, you cover like the timeout stuff, like the actual entertaining fun stuff that if you're not at the game, you don't get to see. So like Luke Kornet painting a picture of like Kristaps Porzingis or something, having those tweets up, that's the fun part. That's the part that I love about your account and some of these other accounts that we've been interacting with just with Celtics Twitter this year. But let's actually get into a little talk about the Celtics. So Noah, I want to ask you first, obviously, the Celtics right now, as we're recording, so we're recording on Wednesday, March 6th. So they have not played their game against the Nuggets as we've recorded. So right now, the Celtics are 48-13. They just came off an 11-game win streak, although they lost to Cleveland in Cleveland by a score of 105-104 after blowing a 22-point lead in the fourth quarter, which I'm not frustrated about or anything. But no, I want to ask you this. So 61 games into the season, 21 left. The Celtics are best record in the NBA, one of the only two teams in the NBA that have a top three offensive and defensive efficiency in both areas. What is your take as far as this team's results so far? Have they exceeded expectations? Are they right about where you thought they were? Or even crazy enough, are they a little under where you thought they would be at this point?
Yeah, they definitely exceeded expectations. Just because their record right now, they're on pace to win, I don't know, 64 games. Is that what, I don't know the math, but you know, this has been an elite year of basketball for this team. And above that, you know, they've been really healthy too. They haven't, you know, knock on wood, haven't had any major injuries. So if you're projecting what their record would have been at this point, this is probably a little bit better than I anticipated. But also, you know, it's March and they've been really good up until March every year. So I don't think that there's any reason to kind of overreact. All I think a lot of people are talking about is this a historically good basketball team. Where do they rank amongst the all-time Celtics teams? Like, I think those conversations are premature, but what we're seeing right now is a team whose off-season acquisitions have panned out perfectly. And that's not always the case, right? We see it all the time when you get a major splash in free agency or trade, and then when you actually put those names on the court together, it doesn't necessarily match up to what the front office, you know, expected. And so that's not the case with this team. This team has really panned out well. So I think it's been a really good season so far. They've looked really good, you know, almost always. And even in nights like last night, like there's, you know, moments in time where they kind of fall off their game, but they've had such long stretches of really solid basketball that's pretty unparalleled in the NBA.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, 11-game winning streak, no matter how you do it, whether it's, you know, winning every game by 2 or 3 points or some blowouts in between, which the Celtics have done, it's been quite a run that they had, and beating some good teams like Dallas at home, Golden State at home. You know, I mean, could they have beaten Cleveland on the road? Sure, but they had a bigger game against Denver that they got to focus on. So I'm not too worried about it, and I'm sure you're not either. Maddie, I believe you got the next question lined up.
All right, so just looking ahead at the standings right now, who do you think is the one team that is the threat in the East to stop the Celtics from getting to the finals?
Miami. I know that the Bucks have a good team. I think there's a couple other, you know, contending teams. I think the Knicks, if they can all get healthy, they were looking really good before everybody got injured there. But Miami ultimately is the number one team that I would not want to see the Celtics face, and that's just because history has shown that. I think a lot of media people in this space are kind of overlooking Miami again, which is kind of mind-blowing to me, because how many times can we do this? Like, we've already been down this road before, and I actually think the team that they have this year is better than the team that they had last year. And so if they're clicking at the level that they were clicking last year's playoffs, and they're able to stay healthy and get hot, they're an intimidating force. But I think Porzingis helps a lot, because, you know, a lot of the reason why they went out and got him is to help disrupt that Miami zone. So, but they're still the number one team, I think, that threatens Boston.
Couldn't agree more. That's mine too, that I always say is Miami. They always scare you. They know how to play the Celtics, and that zone defense just drives them nuts. But anyways, Powder?
Kind of just comparing last year's team, this year's team, what do you think the biggest factor is why the Celtics are playing so well this year compared to last year's team?
I think, well, they had a good team last year too. Yeah. But Porzingis is probably the biggest change, just because he brings another dimension offensively that they've been sorely lacking. Not just the fact that he spaces the floor, like, you pretty much never have, I mean, unless Luke Kornet's on the court, you don't have someone on the court that can't shoot, right? So they've been so versatile offensively. It's like, it's pretty like insane actually to watch at points. And then also the fact that this is Joe Mazzulla's second year now. And so last year he was kind of put in a position to fail. Like, he didn't have a heads up. He didn't have a training camp, off season kind of time to plan schemes and think about what his philosophy was going to be as a head coach. Didn't even have his own assistant coaching staff, which is really unheard of. And this year he has buy-in from the players. He has his own staff that he assembled. He had a whole year to kind of get under his feet and to kind of figure out what his approach was going to be to coaching this team. And I didn't cover the team last year, so I wasn't a media member. But being in every press conference that he does now, like, he is completely comfortable in this role. Like, he has a lot more confidence and a lot more humility. And I think everybody can kind of sense that about him. And so that's a big difference as well. I think the team was bought in. Like, you wouldn't have come back this year if Tatum and Brown felt like he wasn't a good coach. That's the reality of, you know, coaching in the NBA. But the offseason acquisitions, and then just him getting another year under his belt, and then also having a championship pedigree. Like, you have Drew Holiday, you have Sam Cassell. I went back before the season started. I think two teams in the last 25 years won a championship without having someone on the roster that won a championship previously. So it's really hard to break through and become like a first-time NBA champion. That's why it's LeBron and Steph that win every year, right? It feels like. So it's you know, you have to kind of have that experience of someone who's been there before, and I think that they have that now. And that's been really helpful, too.
Again, we're speaking with Noah Dalzell of SB Nation that covers the Celtics. Noah, talk to me about Drew Holiday again for a second, because I think what gets lost is that Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis were kind of the two pieces that were brought in from last year to really improve, especially the offensive side of the basketball for the Celtics. I mean, everyone talks about Kristaps Porzingis, and rightfully so, right? Like you said, he brings a different dynamic. He's a 7'3" shooter that can also defend in the paint and is a good shot blocker as well. But what does Drew Holiday bring to this team that maybe like a guy like Marcus Smart last year didn't bring? Because the way I look at it is Drew Holiday, I think, is a little bit better than Marcus Smart defensively. Maybe give Smart the slight advantage, But I think offensively, from a consistency basis, I think Drew Holiday is 10 out of 10 times better than Marcus Smart as far as scoring consistently and not having like these big nights where he does well and then a lot of really bad nights. So I think that's where the consistency comes into play. So talk to me about Drew Holiday, why he's been a great fit for the Celtics team.
Yeah, well, first of all, Drew Holiday is shooting 65% from corner threes this year, right? And that's
crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. Crazy. So he's been super efficient from threes, just having a career year. It's a year, you know, it's a career year that Malcolm Brogdon had last year, too. It's like, if you come into the system and you're playing around these elite offensive players, like, you get open threes. And that's a credit to Missoula's offense, too, that I think people sometimes overlook. That being said, beyond just the offensive production, which clearly he is a more efficient player. I mean, there's no way around it comparing him to Marcus Smart. And you can't find a bigger Marcus Smart fan than me, but I say that just looking at the numbers. I think defensively, he's a different type of player. Like, I think Marcus has his strengths of some, like, on-ball defense, those end-of-game, like, almost game-winning defensive plays that he's so known for that even in the small stint that he had in Memphis between injuries, we saw him have a couple of those games where it was just, like, quintessential Marcus Smart. Drew Holiday is kind of like a defensive mind in the sense that he has this buy-in because he's older, he's a champion, he came here from Milwaukee, and he's running this team's defense. Like, he's the quarterback of this defense, which is an unusual position for a guard to be in. But it's the role that he's inherited here, and it's the role that Missoula has put him in. And it's really unique. It's not the role that he had in Milwaukee, but that's kind of what has been the key to the Celtics defense, in my opinion. You know, it's not just the fact that he can guard Giannis and he can guard guards and you throw him on anybody and he won't complain. He has no issues. But I think people respect him and they respect what he has to say as far as the defensive philosophy goes. And that's been really helpful as well. And he's the fifth option on this team, and he's probably the best fifth option in the league. And a lot of people are saying, you know, he's not an all-star. There was no case to be made for him to be an all-star. But I thought it was really notable that he's going to be an Olympian this summer. Like, the Olympics team still thinks that he's one of, you know, 13 guys that should be going to the Olympics. And that's because he's shown that he doesn't have to have the ball in his hand. He doesn't have to be the star to be really effective.
Yeah, I actually forgot for a second that Drew Holiday is going to be on the U.S. Olympic team this summer. Then I'm like, oh, yeah, he is. And rightfully so. Right. Holiday's a beast. I love having Drew Holiday here. The day they traded for him, I was like, wow, this is actually a really good trade and someone that we wanted, someone that we needed to complete that starting five. So couldn't agree more with everything that you said about Holiday. Maddie, you got next question.
All right, so looking ahead, I got the Nuggets, Suns, Blazers, Jazz, Suns again. Not the easiest next five games, especially you got Kevin Durant twice, you got the defending champs tomorrow night. What are we thinking record-wise for the next five? I know they're on a current five-game road trip right now, and I know that second Suns game is a home game. But how do we see these next five games playing out? Because to me, this is not the easiest stretch in the world. So I'm just wondering what do you think how it's going to turn out?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough stretch. They've held up well in many tough stretches, and we've also seen them respond really well to losses, particularly tough losses, which I would say last night qualifies as that. I could see them winning, you know, three or four out of the next five. That's probably what I'd predict. Denver's going to be tough. I mean, Denver's coming off a tough loss last night as well. I was watching that game after the Celtics game, and I was thinking to myself, like, this is almost like they're both going to be coming in a little bit frustrated with how their Tuesday night games went. Phoenix, I'm really curious about just because we haven't seen them yet, and they're an intriguing team, and they've played well when they've all been healthy. But I don't know if we're going to have Devin Booker for those. I think he's still questionable with that ankle sprain. You know, it'll be an interesting sequence of games. I think most people that are closely following the team are most curious about late game execution. And by late game, I mean like literal last possession execution, because they're good when games are close down the stretch, but it's when it's still close with a minute, 30 seconds to go, that's where the problems start. So I'll be curious if they have another one of those games in the stretch and how they respond to that. And can they get something else on offense other than, you know, a difficult contested fadeaway? Like, can they get a Porzingis post up or, you know, something wide open Derek White three or something like that. So that's what I'll be looking for. I'm not overly concerned with their record at this point. I'd love to see them. You know, I think they're using a lot of these games to experiment, try different looks. They'll go with the 1-3-1 on defense occasionally, and usually it leads to a run for the other team. But I think for them, it's just reps right now. So, you know, they have pretty much the one seed locked down unless something drastic happens. And so these next games are more about kind of seeing how does Tillman fit? How do those kinds of things fit rather than just like what's their record straight up.
Cool. Better.
Yep. Just kind of going back to Joe Mazzulla, like, I know you didn't cover the team last year, but looking at how he did last year compared to this year, like, the differences you see, like you said, in late game situations, stuff like that. What do you see the biggest differences in his coaching style is, or the way he's coaching this year?
Yeah, I would say the biggest difference is honestly not something schematic that I've noticed, at least, but it's more of just the level of comfortability in the role. And that matters. That matters, like, all the time, right? That matters in everyday interactions. I think some of the things that people had issues with him, like not calling timeouts during runs, like the last play of the game, like, we're seeing the same type of things now. I think the timeout thing personally is overblown. Like, teams I watch all the time, the Celtics are going on these crazy runs, coaches are calling timeouts, and the runs just, like, it does nothing to stop them. So I do think that that narrative is a little bit tired, but we haven't seen, like, schematically huge differences from him. I think one thing that he did clarify, and I don't know if this is a change or if this is just something he said to the media, but I thought it was interesting, and that's that his philosophy is actually not about shooting three-pointers. His philosophy is about getting the easiest shot on the court, and it's about getting open shots. And so whether those are threes, whether those are twos, like, he doesn't want them to necessarily chuck 50 threes up in a game. Like, that's not the objective. And I think maybe that got misconstrued, or that was a pivot. I don't actually know. I think he says that that's how he always was. Maybe it was a little bit of a pivot. But ultimately, like, it's all about hunting mismatches, and it's all about finding the open person, the person that has the best mismatch on the court. That's kind of what the offensive philosophy is. It's very clear. I don't know if it was as clear last year. I think part of it is just, like, him getting better at communicating that to the media.
Again, we're speaking with Noah Dalzell of the Boston Celtics, covering the Celtics for SB Nation. My final question to you, Noah, is this. What ultimately would be the reason why the Boston Celtics would not win the 2023-2024 NBA title? What would be the one thing that would kind of hold them back?
Number one thing I would say probably is Jokic. Like, if they face off in the finals and he's you know, if he's playing like he was last year and Jamal Murray's playing like he was last year, just that's a tough matchup. Number two would be health. I mean, maybe health would be number one, honestly. They've had really good health this year, knock on wood. Like, you know, we're seeing a lot of other teams, like, they're missing, like, all their top guys for long stretches. And this just, you know, they've had little things here and there, and they've rested guys. But overall, people have had a pretty good season health-wise. And so can they maintain that? I think that's the biggest concern with Porzingis, at least. Actually, he's been pretty durable. Like, people are always going to have questions about him just because he's who he is and his, you know, injury past and things like that. But I think if they're able to stay healthy, they have as good a chance as anyone. And the other thing is just, like, people think because they are a really good team, like, they're definitely going to win the championship. But at the end of the day, it's like having a really good chance to win the championship is having a 30% chance, right? So, like, it still means you're probably not going to win. And just to kind of put that out there, I think a lot of people are getting a little carried away where, you know, at the end of the day, the Nuggets are the defending champions and they've had a really good season still.
Every time I see Porzingis walk funny or just stumble or anything like that, I hold my breath every time because I say to myself, please do not let this be the season-ending injury that I think is going to happen. I literally hope and pray every time that happens. If he can just stay healthy for 16 wins, that's all we need.
I know.
A month, a month and a half, that's all we need. Or 2 months, that's all we need. Just give me that, please. But anyways, Maddie, go ahead.
Well, this is actually the perfect segue because I was going to ask about Porzingis because we were just talking about Holiday, who is the other big offseason acquisition the Celtics made. I mean, he's averaging 20, either 6 or 7, depending on how you look on his rebound and then 2 assists. Just talk about the importance he's been this year in the team and how much of an impact he has made when he has been healthy. Obviously, the health concerns is, you know, one thing that Al just said, whenever he looks funny or breathes funny, here we go, thinking, all right, here comes something. But you just talk about the importance of how he's just, in a way, he's kind of looks like Kevin Garnett, but it's like he almost in a way has reminded me with how dominant he has been this year down low.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best post player in the league right now as far as efficiency points per possession, best in the last few years. So, like, I don't think anybody expected that. I mean, he was really good in Washington last year. But early career Kristaps Porzingis could have only dreamed of this type of efficiency that we're seeing right now. So that's been another dynamic to this team that just when the three's not falling, he's been a good option down low. At times, I think they probably should look to him even more. Like, he should probably get more touches than he's getting right now. The other thing is defensively, he's been really solid. And I don't know if people really knew what to expect on that end of the floor. He's one of the best rim protectors in the league right now. Most stats back that up. But he also held up just across the board pretty well. And so this team has been able to be elite defensively in large part because he's been able to be elite defensively. And then at the same time, he hasn't really missed substantial time. Like, he's splitting back-to-backs with Al Horford, so some of those absences come from that. And I think they've been really conservative with him whenever he's had any sort of lingering thing. Like, they just sit him. He's even said, like, I'm good to go, but, like, they want me to be really careful. So I think he has the potential to be a Kevin Garnett-type acquisition in the scheme of things if everything goes according to plan right now, because he's been really, really impactful. And then down the stretch, just drawing free throws. There have been so many games where, like, you look back at the fourth quarter, what went down in the last 6 minutes, he was just, like, getting fouled every single time. And so as long as they keep going to him, like, that's been a really, really good option down the stretch.
All right. Powder?
Just thinking ahead, like, obviously the Celtics have to make it, but who's one team you would like to see the Celtics face in the finals, and what's one team you would not want to see them face in the finals?
Good question. I would like to see them face the Warriors in the finals, but I don't know if that's plausible because they're so far out of the top right now. I just think that would be very poetic to get that type of type of revenge after 2022. I feel like it's the only way to really redeem yourself is to get a championship against the previous team. And I also think they match up really well with the Warriors, which is why the Warriors had to turn to a gimmick defense the other night. And then I think on the other hand, the Nuggets are just, to me, far and away the best team in the West as far as, like, who down the stretch of the playoffs you wouldn't want to see. OKC looked really good. I think they're a tough matchup for anyone. Minnesota's looked really good, but, you know, you can't, it's hard to go from having never been in the playoffs like OKC to now you're winning a championship the next year. Like, I do think that they're probably going to win a championship eventually, that team, but I don't think their time is yet. And Minnesota, I think just their offense has been so bad at points this year and so stagnant that I could see a Celtics defense doing pretty well against them. So to me, Denver is the biggest concern. I think they're most likely going to make it to the finals. I think they have a chance against Denver, for sure they have a chance, but it's going to be tough for anybody. And then I think a team like the Warriors would be really fun to match up against.
All right, now last question. I know it's hard sometimes when you're in the media and you'd have to write about the team and everything, covering the team and whatnot, but where do you see the Celtics team ending up? Are they winning the championship? Are they losing the Eastern Conference Finals, losing the finals? What do you got for your official prediction?
Yeah. My official prediction is that they're going to win the championship. They've shown that they have everything you need. But also, I would not be surprised if it didn't happen. I don't feel like I know for sure. Some people are talking about it like there's no doubt. I think there's still a lot of doubt, but if I had to pick a team right now, like they're my favorite. Because they're historically great right now, just as far as their net rating and what they're doing on both ends of the floor. And I think they're at the right age too. Like, everybody's willing to sacrifice. Everybody has one goal in mind. They've been really on message. So they have a lot of the other kind of narrative points that sometimes teams lack. So I think they're a good pick for anyone who needs to pick a team.
All right. Noah, do you have any questions for us? We've grilled you and you've done a great job of answering them. Now's the chance to grill us about, again, it could be Celtics, it could be any of the other Boston teams, it could be anything you want. So fire away.
Yeah, maybe just curious about how you guys got started doing this and how you guys all know each other.
Ooh, okay. Who wants to break the story? Yeah, who wants to break the story? All right, so do you want to do it, Powder, or do you want me to?
I can give a little bit, and you can fill in wherever you feel. So Al and I are the original two co-hosts. We actually met playing men's league baseball back in, what was it, like 2015 at this point? Both were huge Barstool fans. Al actually got me into Barstool and into listening to Section 10 and Star 9, like Jared Carabas and stuff like that. And just after the 2018 World Series with the Red Sox, Al and I got breakfast and he said, why don't we try and do one, see where it goes? And that's kind of how it started. The name comes from the travel baseball program Al and I used to coach for. We both no longer coach for it, but it's called Legends. So we just came up with the name Legends Lingo. I think Al actually is the one who coined it. But that's just how we got started. And then Maddie can kind of fill in how he came into be.
Yeah, so I joined a website, I think during the pandemic, called CouchGuySports.com. Alan Powder, they were both on it. We three of us became really good friends, and when they lost their third co-host, because he went off to do some better stuff, or that's what he says. they like did auditions and all that for the third chair. I didn't get it because I was doing a bunch of other stuff for the website at the time, so they didn't want to overload me. And then eventually I just kept reappearing as like a guest to the point where Al was like, you just want to come on like full time? And I was like, sure, why not? So that's how I joined these two hooligans.
And he's now our Patriots expert, as well as Powder being our Red Sox expert. Mm-hmm. And so by default, I'm the Celtics expert, and then we just kind of don't give it. It's really, we don't really care. We're more basketball people.
That's funny. That was my other question. I was going to ask if you guys had a one sport that was, I mean, obviously right now the Celtics are fun to follow, maybe more so than some of the other teams represented here. But is that generally speaking, you guys are all more basketball fans?
Yeah, so like I played basketball growing up. My two sports were baseball and basketball. So I played basketball until like junior year, until I got cut for varsity. Then I'm like, okay, baseball it is the run to the way. But I've loved basketball. I've coached basketball, so I've enjoyed it. And I loved the Celtics since I was a little kid too. So
yeah. I'm 6'2", so it'd be against people of my height to not even play basketball. So I played up until high school. I got cut my freshman year because I was actually the smallest big guy. But then I picked it back up in college and did intramurals.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks so much.
Yeah, of course. Any other questions before we kind of wrap up? Because we know you're busy and you got some things you got to attend to.
No, I think I'm all good. Yeah, I appreciate being on. Thank you.
Of course. You want to shout out your socials real quick?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Noah Dalzell NBA. And from there, you can find everything else. My website with all my articles, and my work is mostly on Celtics blog right now.
All right, Noah, we appreciate your time, and hopefully when we see you next, the Celtics will be champions.
Hopefully. Have a good one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Noah. Take care.
Bye, Noah.
All right, shout out to Noah Dalzell for joining us on the podcast. I feel terrible that I kept screwing up her last name. So, Noah, if you are still listening, I'm sorry. Genuine accent. You guys could see in my face, like, I was genuinely...
I saw it every time. Like, oh, I messed it up again.
Yeah, I'm like, I was being so genuine. I didn't want to screw it up, and I feel like I screwed it up. But again, shout out to Noah. She knows her stuff. Go follow her on SB Nation for all of her Celtics blogs. And then, obviously, like she said, on her Twitter, she also writes about the Connecticut Sun on a couple of different publications. So please make sure to check those out. All right, I think we got the Celtics pretty much covered. We did a good amount of Celtics there for about half an hour or so. So before we dive into Maddie's Patriots segment or Powder's Red Sox segment, Powder, I think we need to talk about A&B Burgers and A&B Kitchen and Bar.
Yep. Like I say every week, Legends Lingo is graciously sponsored by A&B Burgers and A&B Kitchen and Bar. A&B Kitchen and Bar is located in Boston, Massachusetts, right across the street from the TD Garden, where A&B Burgers is located in Beverly, Massachusetts, in the North Shore of Mass. If you're looking for a great spot to meet up before, after, even during a Bruins Celtics game or a concert, whatever's going on at the Garden, head over to A&B Kitchen and Bar. They have great drinks. They have great food. They have fish and chips. They have burgers. They have some pastas. They have pizza now. They have great wings, kind of whatever you're feeling to eat before you head into the Garden. And then, or if it's during a game and you want to be in the atmosphere, it's right there, right across the street from the Garden. So make sure you head over there. And when you head over, make sure you tell them the Legends Lingo Boys send you.
Shout out to A&B Kitchen and Bar, A&B Burgers, the best place locally in Boston or the North Shore where you can get a good bite to eat. And better times are ahead when you go to A&B Kitchen Bar or A&B Burgers. And we could have an event down the line, so make sure to keep staying tuned for that. Yes. All right, let's segue a little bit. Since Powder just did the ad read, Maddie, I'm going to kick it to you. So okay. if you listened last week, you'll realize that we kind of delegated the roles. And I just want to explain really real quick why we kind of did that. I kind of thought about it, and I said to myself, you know what? We were getting a little stale. We were kind of doing the same thing over and over again, so we had to change it up. And just looking at the three of us, I think it's pretty fair to say that Maddie knows the most about football and the Patriots, and he follows it the most. Powder is the big baseball guy like I am, but he is definitely hardcore baseball with the Red Sox and everything. And then the Celtics, obviously, I like to try to follow, you know, pretty religiously too. So that's why I've been given the Celtics task, which I have no problem doing. And then the Bruins, like I said, the Bruins we kind of just talk about along with
people. They suck anyways. Who cares about that crap?
Exactly. The Bruins won 4-1 over the Maple Leafs the other night, so I don't want to hear that.
All right, I'm going to go see anyways. It tomorrow night in person. It's fine.
I can't wait until you mush that. All right, so Maddie, you have the Patriots segment as our Patriots expert. So what are some topics you want to bring up tonight?
It's been kind of a quiet week over at Gillette Stadium. The only kind of notable thing was that with the franchise tag deadline approaching, the Patriots actually decided to use it this year. They put a transition tag on Kyle Duggar, which basically means he can still go talk to other teams, but if he is offered a contract, Patriots have a chance to match it, basically. Or they could say to them, yeah, go sign with that team, whatever. We're not paying you that money. So I like the move just because now they get to see what the market is going to be for Duggar, which is a good and bad thing. I agree with the move that it was the right decision to put the tag on Duggar because I think they know what it's going to take to bring back Owenu, Kendrick Bourne, and everyone else that they want to bring back at the same time, too. Especially with what happened in Buffalo today, we don't know what players are going to get released specifically from teams that are in cap hell, like Buffalo and New Orleans, for example. We don't know what's going to happen next. Of course, they could do a trade and all that. As really around now is the time where like trades that impact the draft they really start to begin a little bit. But other than that. I have one other thing to talk about, but I want to get you guys' thoughts first on the transition tag situation and all that. Let's go to Powder first, because screw you, Al.
Before I even talk about it, the Patriots social media being a new age of Patriots football, I just love their social media now. They're kind of buying into being different. And do you see their post they had with the transition?
Oh, I saw it. It was the funniest thing. I was like, whoa, the Patriots social media account, like, finally, like, has, like, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Sense of humor?
Yeah, that. Let's go with that. I was trying to think of another word. But, yeah. Personality. That's the word. They actually have a personality now?
It's nice to see.
Yes. But I agree with you, Maddie. I think it's a good move for the Patriots. Because you don't know exactly what the market looks like for Kyle Duggar. Maybe you don't want to put the franchise tag because maybe it's not exactly what. But seeing what he could be offered and being able to match it, I think, is a great great thing for the Patriots. I think keeping Kyle Duggar, I think the Patriots need to keep him. I think unless it's some ridiculous contract that's just way overpaying, then they should just... sign him to whatever he gets.
As far as my take on the Patriots with the transition tag with Kyle Duggar, this better prove that they are going to sign him to a long-term extension. I mean, you heard what Gerard Mayo said the other day. He's a foundational player. He's gotten better every year since 2020. Okay, if you're going to use this, you better sign him long-term, because if you use the transition tag just to see him go elsewhere, you're going to look really dumb. And Gerard Mayo is going to look really, really bad if the first big move that he does is try to keep a really good player on defense and then he chooses to go elsewhere.
Well, Al, remember, he's not the one making the contract. It's Elliot Wolf.
He's not. You're right. And you're absolutely right. And I get that. You have a point there. Yeah. Let me rephrase that.
Mayo had nothing to do with that.
In the Elliot Wolf - Gerard Mayo era, where the two of them are together and they're kind of like working together to get this Patriots organization back to being a respectable football team, if Elliot Wolf's move doesn't work out, then both of them in turn are going to look really, really dumb. They're really not, they're going to be saying to their free agents, like, okay, we're kind of running similar to how we were with Belichick. Like, we're not going to pay you. And guess what? The Patriots, FYI, folks, they're going to have to overpay a little bit. They are going to have to spend a little more money than they're comfortable with doing than they were in the past. Because if you want to bring in a Calvin Ridley or you want to bring in a Tyrone Smith on the offensive line, then you need to pony up the dough a little bit, because there are going to be better teams out there that will pay less and they're going to want to go to those teams to have a chance to win. But if the Patriots give those free agents a contract that they simply can't refuse, then it shows, okay, they're willing to do something to try to get back to a competitive level.
Another just small, quick tidbit before I get to my other thing. J.C. Jackson released. With that release, Patriots got up to $102 or $103 million in cap now. I think the three of us can just agree. Yay, money. Hope J.C. Jackson's okay with his mental health stuff that's going on off the field. Maybe he might even come back. You never know. But I think a move that the three of us just saw coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think now with the Duggar tag, it brings it back down to like $87 million. But still, you have a ton of money. You still have a ton of money that you can use this offseason for using.
They still
burn the cash.
They still got a lot of money.
Burn the cash.
All right, one other thing. So, Al, you said I could do this, so I'm going to do it. We had the combine this past weekend. Naturally, when I do my mock drafts, I always do one right after the Super Bowl, and then I do one right after the combine, and then I'll do one the week of the draft itself, just because I know there's a first-round trade coming before the actual draft that night. I know it's coming, so I purposely wait a little bit between my second and third one. Top three hasn't changed for me. It's Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels. I'd like for it to stay that way. Obviously, the consolation prize, Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm going fourth to Arizona. The best tackle in the draft, Joe Alt. Right now, he is having going seventh to Tennessee right now. I'm just doing the notables. I'm not going to do all 32 picks here.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Anyone else noticeable? I'll do the AFC East team since we do play them twice a year as well. I have the Jets taking Tyrese Fuaga, the tackle from Oregon State. No one else notable there. Just because he's getting a lot of attention just because of what he looks like, Cooper DeJean. A quarterback from Iowa, I have him going to Philly. To Miami, I have them taking Amarius Mims, a tackle from Georgia. Oh, lots of tackles. Lots of tackles in this draft. Noteworthy pick here for Buffalo. They're taking the guy who took the combine by storm, Xavier Worthy, the fastest receiver in NFL combine history, now setting the record at 4.21 seconds for a 40 yard dash. I have the defending champs, the Kansas City Chiefs, taking Brian Thomas Jr., the wide receiver from LSU. There are any questions, gentlemen? Either team or a certain player that you're wondering what I'm thinking about?
Do you think that there is any possibility that Drake May ends up as a Patriot instead of a Commander? Do you think the Commanders like Jaden Daniels enough
to take
him at two, and then May would fall to three?
I think we find out really at the pro day, LSU's pro day, North Carolina's pro day, because they didn't throw it. They didn't really do anything at the combine. We're not going to, and same thing with Caleb Williams, like the three of them, they're the big three for quarterbacks. They didn't do anything at the combine. They wanted to do it all at their pro day. So their pro days are really going to, we're going to see, like, all right, like, what are teams really thinking after all? And then, of course, you know, like, Adam Schefter is going to leak out every little goddamn rumor. So, but as of right now, that's the three that I have it. But is there a chance that May comes to New England? Yes. But I'm just going to temporarily say yes, or I can't think of another word. But just it's not a confident yes, because
yeah.
I want to see what they do with their pro days.
Just last question real quick. Let's just say that Chicago, Washington, and New England all go to Jaden Daniels' pro day, all go to Drake May's pro day, and all go to Caleb Williams' pro day. What is your official prediction after the pro days if all three organizations end up going to all three of those guys' pro days?
Well, they are going to go to all three, first of all.
So, right. So that's what I'm saying. So they're going to go.
Yeah, they're going to go to all three.
So when they go, do you think that the Commanders are going to fall in love more with Drake May or Jaden Daniels?
I think just based on how their offense, they're going to want their offense to roll. I feel like Jaden Daniels will fall in love with more. But I also wouldn't be surprised if Washington really tries to push Chicago for that number one overall pick, because it's one of the worst kept secrets of how much they love Caleb Williams and how much they want to bring him to Washington. Okay. Like, it feels like they want a mobile quarterback, basically. And both Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams are better mobile quarterbacks than Drake May.
Okay, so your official prediction for the Commanders, number two, is?
For now, I have it at Drake May, but it could change after the pro day. That's what my mock draft here says. But if what I just says happens, it wouldn't surprise me if Jaden Daniels is the second overall pick. How about that?
Fair enough. Adam?
The one question I have is, besides Xavier Williams, obviously running the 4-2-1, who else really stood out to you in the combine?
Another receiver that really stood out for me in the combine, A.D. Mitchell, also from Texas. It wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being a round one pick. There's a strong chance he ends up in New England, which would be awesome, because he has true star quality of being a number one receiver, which we all know the Patriots need. I mean, Joe Alt's just athleticism really showed up this weekend. I think for negative reasons, Caleb Williams stood out just because, you know, it's turning into the Caleb Williams tour and he knows it. He's taking advantage of it. Marvin Harrison Jr. skipping out on basically media availability. Interesting decision there. He just strictly wanted to meet with teams, which is cool with me. Other than that, there was one running back from Louisville. Blanking on his name, who really stood out. Isaac, I think it was, yeah, this kid. Isaac Guerrero, he was one of the fastest running backs in the combine this weekend. He really kind of showed up too as well. He took it seriously, and he's a guy I think whose draft stock did rise a lot as well. And then another receiver that kind of as a receiver, but I think he did pretty well at the combine this weekend. It was Keon Coleman from Florida State. He's a day two pick. There's some draft boards have him going in the first round. No, he's a day two pick, but he's a good day two pick. Like, he's probably gone in the first 10 picks in the second round.
All right.
Possibility to New England, but I don't think he'd fit in here.
All right. And I think that's pretty much it for Patriot stuff. I mean, Dynasty, what'd you think of, real quick, man, what'd you think of episode five of Dynasty?
Oh, God. Episode 5, it sucked reliving that season with the ACL tear. Try not to give away too much because I know Powder probably still needs to watch it. And then,
I do.
Episode 6, I mean, good God, where the hell do you start with that one?
Hernandez.
Let's see here. Episode 6, Hernandez. I mean, I knew they weren't going to go into, like, detail about him specifically. That's what we have all the other documentaries for, about him for. But it's the one thing that I was like, damn, too, was that he knew he was in danger, and he knew his family was in danger, and went to Belichick, and Belichick's competitive edge couldn't trade him. And I think that just shows sometimes the harsh reality of the business side of football is that you're not going to get what you want no matter how good you are.
Right.
Especially if you're in that kind of situation too. And just hearing Robert Kraft's words at the end, bone chilling, what he says at the end. It's like, finally, they admitted it. They finally admitted that they were wrong with picking him.
Thank goodness that they finally admitted it too.
Just that whole episode's crazy. And then a side note about episode 6. So one of my coworkers, this is a quick story. One of my coworkers knows Nathan Price, who is, I don't know if you know that name, Al, former wide receiver in the NFL.
I say it vaguely.
Yeah, not the world's greatest receiver. He was on the Patriots. He was. He's a former Patriot. My coworker runs into him this weekend because they know each other. And they bring up the Dynasty. And Nathan Price says, my phone has not stopped blowing up about episode 6 to the point where, like, I had to he had to turn his phone off. And he said that, one, I have my own Aaron Hernandez stories, which is like, oh, God, now I got to meet this guy. And then, two, he said, I agreed with every word Wes Welker said in that episode. And then I didn't know how involved Deion Branch was. Did you know like how involved Deion Branch was, Al? I didn't.
No idea. Let's table it there just because
he looked cold in that episode.
Let's table it there because we don't want to give too much away for Powder. But I'm going to say this, Powder. When you watch the Hernandez episode, it's going to bring back a lot of weird emotions and memories.
Yeah.
Some of them are going to be like, wow, he was a good football player. And some of them are going to be like, wow, he was a real scumbag.
And I had to take like 10 minutes to ourselves after that episode because we were like, holy shit, basically.
All right. So that covers our Patriots talk for the week. Powder. Red Sox stuff. Anything Red Sox related that really catch your eye that you want to talk about?
Yep, obviously the big news with Giolito. He has a partially torn UCL. It was said to for sure is today that he's going to get a second opinion on it just to see what the best strategy is, whether it's surgery, whether it's rehab, what to do, but a lot of sources are saying he's going to miss the whole season, which obviously that was kind of the Red Sox as of right now. Who knows with Jordan Montgomery, but that was kind of the Red Sox big signing this year, this winter, which he was supposed to be slated as one or two for the Red Sox rotation. I just want to hear your guys' opinions on what it means for the Red Sox if he is out for the whole year and in that kind of stuff with Lucas Giolito.
Matthew?
I'll go first. I mean, there's two ways to look at it. It's either, okay, Red Sox are going to go get Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell right now, or you can look at it and you could say, oh, this is just the Red Sox going to be like, oh, well, this is why should we go spend money if they could get hurt? But there were red flags about Giolito signing here. His velocity was down, giving up 41 home runs last season. What the hell is that all about? He's not the same that he was a couple of years ago, obviously. But there was an injury coming with him that he wasn't telling anyone about, and now it happened. So obviously, we'll see what the second opinion says. Maybe he'll go get a third. I don't know. But if he is out for the next year and a half, whatever it is, for his recovery, just stop getting into the pissing contest with Scott Boras. Just sign. Just get Montgomery. Just get him. Just start there. That's all I'm going to say.
So as far as for me, I mean, this just shows that the way that they went about this whole offseason was wrong, and it was just non-effective. You lost Chris Sale in the trade to the Braves for Vaughn Grissom. Fine, whatever. You wanted to sign Lucas Giolito. Okay, fine. Again, whatever. But the fact that you didn't go out and get more starters, you're trusting Brian Bayo to take a big jump in his second MLB season. You need guys like Hunter Crawford, who, yeah, his fastball velocity's up. That's great. But you need him to take a jump up. You need Nick Pivetta to basically do the same thing he did in 2023. You need Garrett Whitlock to be healthy the whole year. And you need Tanner Houck to get past the lineup more than twice without getting batted around. I don't like those odds. And Maddie, I hate to say this, but I'm actually going to dispute your point here because this gives John Henry more reason to not spend money. We have that until like, right.
And he said both sides.
Both sides, right. So I'm going to go on off of, I'm going to disagree with the first point that you made about they should go out and get Montgomery because, and then I'll agree with your second point because they're not going to get Montgomery. There was a report that came out literally in the last half hour that says Jordan Montgomery preferably wants to pitch in a smaller market like Texas or St. Louis. But there may not be that opportunity. So if that's true, we know how the media is, how sometimes it can be a bunch of, just a bunch of BS. Mm-hmm. But if that's true, then it's like, okay, you don't want to spend any money. You don't want any pitching to happen. You don't want any pitching to come here and actually make something happen. So what do you want? Do you really want to lose? Because I don't know about John Henry, but as far as us fans are concerned, we want to see a competitive baseball team. Remember, 2 years ago, this team was two games away from the World Series with that roster that they had. But then they decided, oh, okay, we're going to go in this different direction with the young stars. Well, guess what? They're just going to keep telling us year after year, oh, it's going to be 2025. Oh, it's going to be 2026. Oh, it's going to be 2027. Oh, it's going to be 2028. How much longer can you play that game? Go get the pitching. Go sign Jordan Montgomery. Go get Blake Snell. But guess what? They're not going to do that because they're cheap. And they're going to keep trying to find the diamonds in the rough like the Lucas Giolitos of the world. And they're going to ultimately get burned for it. And that's what happened this time. They got burned for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all I got.
That's really it with Red Sox news. Exciting stuff. They're obviously their record. They have the second best record in the Grapefruit League, but spring training games mean nothing because obviously after the fourth inning, it's basically everybody's minor leaguers getting playing time, so can't really tell much.
One thing real quick that I just saw that I want to bring up real fast, Powder, I don't know if you caught this, but Alex Cora, they were talking about his house being up for sale in Newton.
I did see some stuff with that.
Yeah, I don't know how true it is, but this is what I'm just going to say real quick on that. If his house is actually up for sale, then it just proves that he's ready to get out of here. And I don't blame him one bit. He should be in a winning organization. He should be in an organization that actually gives a crap about spending money. And if you don't want to spend money, then I don't blame him for not wanting to be here. He makes millions of dollars. He can move his family elsewhere, unless he really likes being here. But if I'm him, I'm looking for the next best opportunity. But I don't know. I don't know if you guys have any quick comments on that, but it's just something I wanted to throw in there because I know I saw it all over social media.
No, I agree with you. If it is true, then yeah, he's probably just trying to find a way to be ready to get out of here as soon as the season ends.
Maddie, you got anything on that?
You know, people sell their houses all the time. Who cares?
True. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Anything else you guys want to bring up tonight in general before we head out for the week?
Can we end on a happy note? I got sure, one thing. That? I just want to give quick claps to MLB The Show for what they did, where you can now play as a female. Al, you said at the beginning of the episode, it's Women's History Month. You know, claps for what they did there. Everyone who's pissed about it, go outside and touch grass. Great to see just more glass walls being shattered like that.
I love seeing people who are like, why is this is so stupid? It's a baseball game. Like, females are not in baseball. But then they make themselves a 6'10", 250-pound shredded baseball player that is unrealistic to what they actually are. Like, yeah, obviously women don't play in the major leagues, but also, you're not in the major leagues and you're not 6'10", 250 pounds of pure muscle. Like, you don't say it's non-realistic when you make up yourself as the greatest baseball player to ever play.
Right, exactly. No doubt about it. But yeah, no, shout out to MLB The Show. They actually did something right.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else before we get out for the week?
I got nothing.
Real quick Red Sox thing that I just realized too. Brian Bale might be signing an extension through 2028.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Yeah, it could be a good long term to kind of buy out some arbitration years, which is good.
Yeah, they need to lock up an ace for the future. So might as well get Bayo because keeping here for the next 5 years, I'm down with that.
And then get Cassis signed for a long term.
Exactly. Get that young core that you're talking about together.
Yep.
We'll leave it there. As always, make sure to rate and subscribe to the Legends Legal Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Anchor, and everywhere else where you can get your podcasts. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Legal Legends, and make sure to follow Student Union Sports on all social media platforms. That includes Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, everywhere else at Student Union Sports. Hit up Liam Smith if you want to get into the Student Union Sports family, at Liam Knows Things. We will be back next week. Again, shout out to Noah Dalzell for joining us this week. And we do have a guest lined up for next week. We can't wait to have her on. So, as always, that is Tom Powder Cadence. That is Maddie Burnett. I'm your host, Alan the Gideon. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening to episode 263. We'll see you next week for episode 264.
Yes, sir.